Hey, the date is October 20th, 2015, and I'm here with Bridget Baer, the community builder extraordinaire, street fair planning queen. I'm just going to dive right in. How long have you been involved in community building?
That's a good question. I don't know.
I'll start with a toughie.
Yeah. So I've probably started community building as a kid, but professionally, the last 12 years in Portland, Oregon. I helped a business association that I was a part of when I sold the business that was in that association. Mm-hmm. And instead of starting a new business, I just went into helping the association.
So I became that was Mississippi?
No, it was the North Northeast Business Association.
Oh.
I became their staff person, director at some point. We kind of never really did go with executive director because they couldn't afford it.
Couldn't
afford me as an executive director. I was just a director.
Right. Kind of like my job at Woodstock.
Yeah. Can't afford you as an executive director, so we'll just get you for slave labor wages.
Right.
Do it everything anyway.
Right. And that's... That cafe was Bridges, right?
Yep.
Right.
So I had opened Bridges in 93 and sold it in 2000.
Okay.
Actually, I think we opened in 94. Now that I'm saying that.
Yeah. And it's still open, but it's run by someone else,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Sold it to a really cool couple. They still own it. And he's a chef. She's the manager.
Oh, cool.
Awesome.
Yeah. What was Bridges Cafe like? I don't think I ever had the honor to go there.
Oh, you gotta go. It's still a great breakfast place. I opened it as a soup and sandwich place. Mm-hmm. So kind of thought about the single guys and gals. It was the cop shop opened up on MLK just recently. It had opened. So it was kind of target marketing those guys and the construction workers because Northeast was heavily being rebuilt and, you know, revitalized. Mm-hmm. So a lot of soup, a lot of to-go kind of meals and good home cooking. Mm-hmm. But within a year, everybody was bugging me for breakfast.
Right.
You know, because we had scones and muffins and stuff anyway, and they're like, give us breakfast, give us board. So we started opening early, and it became a great breakfast place. You know, Portlanders, they love
Portland
breakfast.
Loves their breakfast, yeah.
They love
the lines outside the door, at screen door. And,
I know.
Yeah.
And it's a dinky little place, and I never thought it would work, because, you know, 70 seats, literally, that's all there were. And you really need 150 to be able to turn a profit in a restaurant. And I designed the place to be takeout.
Right.
And it was meant to be... Come in, get out, you know, fast. So
we're glad you're here, but then go, please.
Yeah, it was tiny.
Was it a coincidence that it sounded like your name, or was that
intentional? It's a friend who picked it out. Kind of, we were all. I had a tribe. I still do. My group of people, my chosen family. You know, they all helped me to build out. You know, we all did our part doing the sinks and the electricity, and it was hilarious. But. I opened that thing with $7,000.
Wow, good for you.
I know, it's crazy.
You can stretch the F out of a dollar, apparently.
Yeah, it was a lot of barter. But one of them just suggested, why don't you name it after the Portland Bridges and it'll play on your name.
It was a great name.
Yeah, and once we used all the art and everything, was all the bridges, it was cool.
Yeah, I always notice it when I drive by still.
Yeah,
you know. It's cool. Did you have a food background or you just...
25 years. So until I opened Bridges, it was 20 years and I never really owned one, but I'd done everything else. Lots of catering. But I was a maitre d' and a waiter and a bartender and a cook and a, you know.
I think you learn the best business skills in the restaurant business. Seriously. I mean, I think you learn to do everything, really.
Well, the 5 years before I opened Bridges, I had managed this place, the place before Bridges, that it was kind of running it. So I did all the back end paperwork, the business side of it. And because I was going to school, got my business degree, basically, a degree in Asian studies, which I was really focused on language learning and stuff. I wanted to do an import-export business.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. What was interesting is I came to Portland because my husband got his first job. He was doing the bachelor's, master's, doctoral program. Finally got his first job offer in Portland. So, and I didn't care. As long as it was on the West Coast, I didn't really know Portland was so cool. And I went to the bank not long after being here with my... business plan, import-export business, I was going to do all this stuff. And they're like, no, you know, you don't have any experience in this field.
Oh.
You don't know anything about this. You know, you have a business degree. You put together a nice plan. You have no money.
Right.
You know.
Is that a business that requires a lot of capitalization?
I didn't suspect. Think so, and my plan didn't think so, but, you know, they were way more knowledgeable on the intricacies of international business, and I just didn't have it all.
Right.
And they were right. It was Albina Bank is really who gave me the straight scoop, because I'd already been turned down by a couple others, and the guy who I met with was really cool, and he's like, why don't you open a restaurant? You have all this restaurant. Okay, so I kind of did only open it to establish my chops in town, you know, to kind of get a business going. I borrowed money from them the second year, did the major build out, did the breakfast thing, and paid it back, you know, had employees, did all the right requisite experience. You know, I needed to do that myself as a business owner.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then I met Peter and had this great time with these kids, and I decided not to open the import-export business when I sold.
Oh, so that was Peter's your second husband?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was so funny, because, we were just kind of, why do we need to work this hard? Bridges was so hard.
Yeah, I can't think of anything harder than running a restaurant, honestly. I'm actually fantastic. Reading a book called Delancey about a couple that decided to open a restaurant to the detriment of their marriage.
Ours kind of went tank too right away, but not really because of the restaurant. I'd always worked hard in restaurants, but he was doing the midlife crisis. You know, he finally finished school, this was his first job, and he didn't have any more goals. He wanted, you know, and I was for the first time really focused on my own baby, quote unquote, my little dissertation project with Bridges, and he couldn't hang with it. I kept saying, you know, you got to give me a couple of years. It was kind of because of the restaurant, but not, it could have been any business.
Right.
Would have been any, I don't think it was a restaurants are hard, but they're for young people because the stamina is so intense.
Right. That's how I tend to think, in the hours, right? When you're working, you know, even if you're working a little cafe.
I didn't even do dinner. I just did breakfast and lunch.
Still, but
I opened it to just do lunch because I already knew how hard this was going to be.
Right.
But then everybody pushed me for the early morning thing and
I think it's in person.
The association was the best part about it that I learned, that whole collaborative marketing piece. I was focused first on marketing. When I first got there, I really was focused on marketing and my $100 a month marketing budget. Ridiculous, you know. So working together with the other businesses in my area, you know, doing some collaborative parties and schemes, doing cross-pollinization with our customers. And then the business association, once we started, I started getting a handle on that. We started doing some bigger events and really pulling people in. And really, you just had to give time and energy. Right. Then you didn't have to contribute a lot of money.
Right.
$100, you know, something like that.
And you had to get people to get involved, right? Because that can be tricky. Right.
Well, so that's really what, at first I was just focused on marketing. So it was kind of, if you can't see the advantage to your business and the advantage here of this exponentially increasing your $100 to this huge marketing exposure, then you don't get to participate.
Right.
It's your choice. Right. You know, I kind of really didn't get what I learned over time. You know, at first I was just, this is a no-brainer. Of course. You know, I'm a small business owner. I got to take advantage of what I can.
Right.
And then gradually after selling the restaurant, I really focused just on the association work. And I realized that the true advantages, sure, you got a good deal on marketing, but the inherent community that you built by being involved with all these people became one of your best marketing arms.
Right,
a,
right.
They were a really great arm for your own business, but B, you looked out for each other. The whole community was so much safer when you all knew each other and were connected. We had listservs and telephone trees, you know, even before the computer.
Right.
Oh my God, before the internet, I mean.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, our kids got jobs because we knew so-and-so and everybody as we grew up together. And
I think the people that come to your businesses sense that too, right? They sense more of that sense of community if it's there, right?
Right. Definitely. I mean, we would all pick one of each other's businesses for a period of time to promote their business. It's your business. So if you bought a scone, then you also got this free card from the guy with the frame shop who would da-da-da-da.
That's really smart.
And he and I would switch for like a year and then switch with the guy with the, you know, other shop, whatever.
So it's kind of like, I hate to make this analogy, but like a mall, right? Like if people are all there, they're going to like be more likely to frequent the other businesses. And
totally like a mall mentality.
Yeah. And the right mix of businesses.
Well, the malls really were built on the small town Main
Street.
He actually took it from the Main
Street.
Small
town and put it inside a soulless building.
Made it became the mall, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And you kind of, your business kind of morphed from, you know, after you sold the restaurant, or maybe before you sold the restaurant, you started doing street fairs, or that kind of came later?
Well, I started doing the events. The events, because okay. It was a natural outgrowth of my catering. I'm really good at multitasking. Mm-hmm. And so I would always be the event planner or the event organizer. I mean, I started doing events when I was a little kid. That's why I say, right. I think I actually started a long time ago, because my neighborhood, I was the one who always rallied all the kids, and we did the dog or the pet parades, or, you know, the water show off the docks. I mean, crazy stuff.
Right, right.
Kid stuff. Mm-hmm. So at that time, with North Northeast Business Association, yeah, we did the MLK run together, and we did the Saturday stroll, and mm-hmm. we did a, you know, map, walking map. You know those.
Yeah.
So I was just always the one in charge of events, it seemed like. Mm-hmm. It seemed really easy for me to be the coordinator of events. Mm-hmm. Could handle it.
Yeah, and I've seen you during one of these events, and at least one, and you're always so calm and collected, right? And I just always, because I would not be if I was in your position in the event planning. I know that I would just be, I mean, I have been that person that's just been like freaking out. And
well,
like,
we all have our moments.
Right. So is that something that just comes from like the time doing it over and over again, and you just get so you
probably,
and you plan everything so well, the pieces fall into place, and
probably, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of forced listening and deep breathing when emergencies are at hand, because you have to, and you know, they're not all that different, even if they're different groups of people and different events. There's still some major components that, as long as you have those major components in place, you can rely on the day or event going a certain way. And that's, you know, yeah, it's having enough lists and having enough people to check them off.
I have a friend who does event planning for a nonprofit, and she says that she doesn't tend to freak out the day of the event or the night of the event either, but she can find herself more freaking out when the day is sort of just as the event's about to come up, if it doesn't feel like the pieces are getting, the things are getting checked off. Is that how you feel too about events, or is there a sort of a period that we
so somewhere along the line?
Peak in your
so
freak
I started
out.
Doing this in 2000 heavily, straight, you know, just doing events and association, helping them. But somewhere around the middle of this, you know, 2007 period, I really stopped worrying about the events, mm-hmm. and really started focusing on the people. Mm-hmm. And getting them to take on ownership of their events, mm-hmm. and really focused on teaching them how to coordinate and manage a street fair.
That's smart.
And it didn't really matter if it wasn't a street fair, if it was some other kind of event, I could help them with it. It was a holiday market or a, you know, a job fair or something. Mm-hmm. Same kind of thing.
Right.
But really, I just focused on the people and helping them develop the tools so that they could do the event.
Right, which makes sense.
I kind of gave up the whole worrying about the event thing. If the parade was falling apart the week before, then we kind of didn't have a parade.
Right.
It wasn't the end of the world.
Right, right. No one was going to die.
The end of the world was that the person who was managing the parade had something horrible happen.
Right.
Of course, then we would all step in and take care of it, and so would I mm-hmm. be there to do that. But if really it was somebody who just couldn't manage it, you could spot that along before the last week.
Right.
You know, you spot that in the 2-3 months ahead of time, and just spent more time with them. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I learned in that period after I sold Bridges was mediation. I went into the Community Mediation Center, I think it was called, mm-hmm. like that. And
you actually formally learned mediation?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a killer skill. And yeah. Every kid in high school should learn mediation. It's mm-hmm. a simple, I think I had a 40-hour training over a period of 6 weeks or something. Mm-hmm. We did 10 hours a week or something. 4 weeks. Really good. Really good stuff. And really, it's all about listening.
Right.
Almost 100% of mm-hmm. it is teaching you how to listen.
Right.
And it's all these different mechanisms to restate and rephrase mm-hmm. and empathize.
Reflective listening. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, there's super easy stuff. So it's just impossible to learn it without practicing it.
Right.
So what they
I can
do
see that
is,
coming in handy with the business association.
Yeah. They give you the free training if you volunteer for them for a year.
Oh, really?
So that, it's not about learning it, because really, yeah, great to learn. Mm-hmm. My mother taught me about this golden rule too, you know, a million years ago, but it's about doing it. And mm-hmm. so for a year, or for once a week, for a year, you volunteered at the mediation center. And I think the shifts were 2 to 4 hours kind of thing. And you helped neighborhood disputes.
You probably met incredible people too that way.
Incredible people. Right? And it was the dog barking and the leaf falling on the other, you know, and the fence and the...
That's your book.
I mean, there's some great stories. Right. So, and that was just 1 year. So after doing that, which was really cool, I volunteered for Multnomah County Small Claims Court.
Interesting.
For 6 years. Mm-hmm. So 2 to 4 times a month, usually once a week, I go down to Small Claims Court and listen to these two parties and really getting people in the same room to listen to each other. Did you hear what she had to say? Finding the underlying issues, you know, getting people to even talk about what really is the important thing.
Right, because it's never about what it's about, right? It's always about
something. It's never about what it's about.
Right, right.
And then listening and helping them come to the resolution so that the judge didn't care what it was.
Right.
You know, so there was a really good model in mediation. This was awesome model, which isn't in the neighborhood thing, but in small claims court, somebody files against you. If you go to mediation and come up with a resolution, you're done. And nobody gets anything on their record. If you don't, the judge will decide for you.
Right, right, right.
It's not a problem.
Right.
It will happen today.
And he'll do it pretty
quickly. You will win or lose.
Right.
Well, small claims courts, you don't get a lot of time.
Right.
Everybody knows that. You just don't. And so it's a huge incentive for them to work it out.
Right.
And I even did about 2 years of landlord-tenant court, which is... called eviction court, basically. It's awful and horrible and really, really hard. It was the hardest mediation I ever did. Because, of course, everybody goes to mediation to try to work it out. And you get these landlords with this, I can't pay my bills if you don't pay rent.
Right.
I mean, and the other guys, it's their home.
Right.
You know, and they had to get in the hospital. I mean, it was so hard.
That sounds hard. Yeah.
It was awful. Great training. Really great training.
Yeah, I've been considering it. So,
mediation, I mean, I think every kid should learn in high school. It's really good to learn. We always learn how to read and we learn how to speak. How to supposed to take speech, you know, and we learn how to write. There's no class in listening.
No. No, you're right.
And yet on the other side of all of those things, somebody has to be there to make those activities work.
Right.
To read, to speak. Right.
It's folded into so many careers too in its own way, whether it's recognized or not. Teaching, being a lawyer, what have you. Yeah.
So that was really helpful in all of this work because I do exercises with my community groups. One of the first things we'll do is a listening exercise. We actually practice just doing this
kind of
instructive listening.
I heard you say this kind of thing, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Or just simple listening.
Right.
A simple dyad where I talk nonstop for 3 minutes. That's it. You don't even get to say anything. You don't get to nod your head or anything, you know. Right. You're supposed to just listen. You're good at it because you're already an interviewer. So, yeah. Anyway.
The social work.
That helps, though. That kind of stuff really helps is getting the people to get it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's so easy to get caught up in your own thing, right? And I read a book out of the, I think it was the Getting to Yes Project.
Okay.
Right. And I remember that. What came away for me for that was... always assume that the other party has the best intentions. Because they usually do. They usually think that they're doing the best thing.
Right.
Every now and again there isn't somebody who's just, they're just evil and they're out to get somebody or whatever. Right. Or greedy. But in most cases people have the best intentions. And recognizing that for each. Yeah. And those can come into conflict even if you both have the best intentions. So, interesting.
Born in the same sandbox.
Right. Yeah. So how long have you done, would you say that you've done street fairs? Just like say 12. This.
Well,
about 12 years? Is that?
15 years.
15 years.
Yeah, it's almost the end of 14, right? So was starting in 2000. I mean, it really started in 99 because I helped with the stuff in when I had Bridges.
Right.
They were the first long-term community building project. You know, I don't know if they were the first street fair.
So did Northeast, did they have a street fair?
Multiple. You know, the first street fair, really, that I helped organize was Good in the Hood in Portland. Sorry, the first street fair in Portland. I actually did a bunch of street fairs in Humboldt County in California.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and back in Michigan.
Okay.
A little bit in Washington, at least one.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So,
did you go to school in parts of Humboldt? Them, but Ian did. My husband, X.
Okay.
He did his master's there.
Oh, okay. Interesting, yeah. I've been there once.
Yeah, that's a good spot.
Patrick's Point. Right?
Yeah.
That's why I moved to Oregon, actually.
Oh, wow.
And were you, tell me if I'm wrong, but you were there kind of for the sort of genesis of the Mississippi Street Fair.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right,
yeah,
right.
We started
right.
it, for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Which
2000.
Is arguably kind of one of the sort of landmark street fairs in town, don't you think?
I think so.
Yeah.
Well, and the Business Association didn't exist.
Right.
The street fair
made it exist
4 years mm-hmm. before we actually incorporated and then said, oh, actually, maybe we should have an association around this thing.
That's interesting. So what businesses, because usually it sounds like...
Who were helped starting it?
Yeah.
K. Newell, Sun and Lighting.
Mm-hmm.
Purple Parlor. Dan really? And Molly Sadowski. Awesome. They were actually the major impetus.
Mm-hmm.
Cliff Belt with a construction company.
Mm-hmm.
And
Mississippi Pizza, was that?
Wasn't there yet.
Oh, wasn't there? Okay.
The place yet. Very quickly, within 2 years after that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So the main partner in that first year fair was the Boise Elliott Elementary School.
Mm.
They were really one of the main. They had been doing a multicultural fair for 20 years
mm-hmm.
before. And we went to them and said, we want to help. We want to help you do your multicultural fair. We want a multicultural fair in our neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
We think it would be really cool to have it in the street. Can you have it outside the school? And they said, no, that's a bad idea. And we go, okay, well, we'll help you. And so we gave them some prizes. And 1 year we went there and gave them food, kind of thing. But within the very first year, really, we said, well, we need to expand this. And your multicultural fair is in May, cool, on Thursday or something, and they mm-hmm. would close on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have the street fair on Saturday, and you guys be a part of our street fair. And it was mm-hmm. called the Boise Elliott Multicultural Mississippi Street Fair. It's a huge,
that's a
long
mouthful.
Thing. I know. In fact, I think we had Avenue.
You put that on a t-shirt.
Street fair. I know. It was hilarious. I think we did it together for 3 years. Like that, mm-hmm. or maybe at least two. And
what year is this?
That was 2000, mm-hmm. 2001 or 2002. Mm-hmm. And then by three, they said, you know, we'll just come to your fair.
Hmm.
And they were still great partners. We had meetings there that we did all our copying there.
Mm-hmm.
They were the recipient of any funds that we raised, which we didn't for many years.
Yeah, that's believable.
Yeah, I think it was in 2004 that we actually then started the Business Association, because we did a fair in three, and it was one of those, we're not really an organization, and we have this treasury now, because mm-hmm. we have this event, and
right.
maybe we should be something.
Do you feel like the street fair is kind of what put Mississippi on the map? Because I don't think I even had heard of Mississippi until about 2003 myself.
I love to take credit for it, but I think that PDC actually dumped a ton of money into
the urban renewal.
Yeah, stuff. Urban renewal area. It was a target area
mm-hmm.
for 7 years before I came in there.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, my first contract was with PDC to help. The first year that I was there, Janet Bauer was a target area coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
She was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
She drove me fucking crazy. She could not make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
If her life depended on it. Now, that's why she was so good, as it turns out.
Mm-hmm.
This is before I even understood mediation or anything, because we were doing this fair, and I'm like, well, what about this? What about that? You know, well, we'll get back to you. We'll go to the committee. We'll do it. And I'm like, just answer the question. You know, she wouldn't. She was not a business owner. And here I just come fresh from owning my own business.
Right.
And she was a classic government employee who mm-hmm. basically will get back to you kind mm-hmm. of thing. And it actually helped the area really own a lot of the stuff that she helped start, because mm-hmm. she was really there for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
They paid her a good salary, and they put a bunch of money into the area, gave tax breaks to developers,
mm-hmm.
and then she was done. And I think that was 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, I said, hey, we did the street fair, PDC, can you give us some money? And they said, well, we'll give you money as a contractor to, I don't know if that was the first year or the second year, I'll have to go back and look, mm-hmm. whenever it was, but they actually hired me as a contractor to do events
mm.
for four target areas.
Mm.
Yeah, so I had like 10 hours a month divided by four neighborhoods. It was ridiculously...
God.
I know, it was... Super,
a month? Right? 10 hours a month?
Yeah, I mean, it was super cheap.
Wow.
I don't even know why I agreed, except I wanted to work part-time, and I thought mm-hmm. that was cool. So mm-hmm. I worked for Humboldt, Alberta, MLK, which was North Northeast Business, was huge. Could have spent 10 hours a month on just them and Mississippi.
Right.
But I hit it off best with the Mississippi gang. And those right. guys were so sincere. Mm-hmm. You know, they really wanted to do something. They all gave a lot of themselves. And mm-hmm. so that's really why.
Yeah.
I mean, it all came together. I think PDC really, really put it on the map. Mm-hmm. I mean, they didn't create the brand. Mm-hmm. They didn't build the identity. They didn't come up with these creative fairs or anything.
Right.
But they did fund it.
This, for me, the confluence.
They pretty much funded it.
The confluence of the two, probably, you know.
Yeah, I think they funded that whole revitalization plan, mm-hmm. really. They gave so much money to developers and tax breaks.
Mm-hmm. And it seemed like, maybe I have this wrong, correct me if I do, but it seems like the vision, the business, or sorry, the building owners, property owners in Mississippi had some vision.
And so
too.
There's another person who really gets a lot of credit is Michelle Reeves, mm-hmm. because she worked for Windermere Real Estate mm. at the time. And somebody, I think it was Brian Wanamaker, owned a couple buildings, and he didn't want to do the regular thing. He wanted to be, he was a local boy, mm-hmm. he wanted to do the right thing. And so he found her and said, how can I, you know, maximize these businesses without bringing in Starbucks. Cool. And so she was already had a reputation of being this, we'll find the local business owner.
Right.
So she started consulting with all the property owners. Mm-hmm. And you had to kind of go through, you didn't have to use Michelle. She certainly didn't work with every one of the property owners.
Right.
But if you wanted tax breaks and these gap financing tools that PDC offered in all the urban renewal areas, you pretty much had to listen.
Right.
You didn't have to do it, but you had to at least listen. And she really made, I mean, she, we would have been toast if it had gone, you know.
Starbucks.
Anybody. And, yeah. She really worked with these guys and got them to keep the rents low and to chop the back half off because retailers really only wanted the small front windows, you know. They didn't need huge square footage spaces.
Right.
Cut them up small. I mean, she really knew how to do the right kind of development.
Talk about vision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was there before me for sure. I mean, even though I was doing street fairs, she says that it wouldn't have happened if we weren't doing the event stuff to really entice people who are really creative and went, wow, we want to do that.
Right. It seems like it takes almost both.
It was definitely a three-leg stool. I mean, a really good developer, a really good event planner, and a really good development agency with some bucks.
Right.
Yeah.
And how does your... I know you talked a bit about your restaurant work and how that contributes to your street fair abilities, but what else about restaurant work do you think you bring into what you do now?
I don't give people what they want. Mm-hmm. Not what you want them to want.
Right.
The classic line.
Right.
Because in restaurants, you can put together fabulous menu and whatever that you think is amazing, and they're only going to order what they want.
Right.
So you learn pretty quickly how to discern. You know, I never understood what a target market was. Mm-hmm. So that really helped. I really solidified that knowledge in restaurants mm-hmm. and understood how to reach them. Mm-hmm. So in community building and, you know, event management, that it's the critical piece.
Right. Because your target market in one neighborhood is going to be a lot different than in another neighborhood.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And not only is it more cost effective if you know who they are when you're actually doing an event, but when you're developing a planning committee, mm-hmm. you know, who is that market? It's not the ones you're advertising to. It's the people who want to make a difference and be in a community over a long haul and actually...
The ones who show up.
Not just the ones who show up, but the ones who don't show up. So that's the harder thing. I really learned that is that you know, equity is the buzzword now, but you really need to figure out how to get people who are not there. Mm-hmm. What's their take on things and what's their interest and what they want to do or say.
How do you do that?
It's so hard. But you use people. Use people is probably not the right PC term, but you, you know, you use your community. So in Humboldt, we had a whole bunch of Asian business owners, and I had an Asian studies degree. Mm. I knew Japanese and Chinese.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I thought, oh, I'm going to be the one, man. And I could not get them to budge. Mm. Because, and they would not show up. They would not participate in anything. It was free. And what I learned was, I'm from the government. It's not necessarily a good way to be, you know, introduced. And even though I wasn't, I was actually working for the business associations. My contracts came funded through PDC and from the city of Portland. And it just didn't take long for people to understand what was happening. And they just don't, rightfully so, for a very good reason. They don't really trust the government.
Right.
Not our government, but where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes
and
sense.
Lots of times you can't trust our government. So, right, right. Yeah, no, they were really unsure for a good reason. Russians, too, now in Park Rose. We had a lot of Russian business owners. Like, the last person they're going to want to work with is somebody from the government.
So do you find ways to approach them that seems less governmental, or do you just...
Yeah, you find their friends.
Right.
Sometimes you go... I was coaching Tiger business owners who I worked with for a year. Mm-hmm. We were at the Main Street Conference last week, and they're going, but the one guy, we still haven't gotten through to him. I go, well, is he married? Yeah. Who knows his wife? And
there you go.
Actually get to know people around them and ask and get them to understand where you're coming from so that they can go to the hard to reach guy.
Right.
And most of the time what I coach the groups on doing is just ignoring them.
Mm-hmm.
Drop the hard sell. Don't even pay attention to them. If they're negative and don't want to participate, then focus on people who do.
Right.
And that's usually, they'll come along.
Right.
Eventually. I mean, the guy, one of the best corners on Mississippi, right in the middle, he would not do anything. He had a warehouse. He would not do anything, not do anything, not do anything. 2 years ago, he finally caved.
Wow.
And he took down his building and put in this fabulous mixed-use retail, and it's gorgeous.
Hmm.
So he would not participate.
Hmm.
He wouldn't sponsor. He wouldn't do anything. He was he had a warehouse there, and that's what he was going to do there.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how much the times changed. It took him 14 years, 12 years at least.
What do you think changed him?
He finally just...
Got it?
Yeah, he got it. Like, you have to, at some point, give up the ghost and let the guy figure it out on his own.
Right.
You cannot beat yourself up, or you're just going to be...
You're going to go crazy.
You're going to be sad.
Right.
You're
right.
Going to just make yourself sad, yeah. Yeah.
Well, that dovetails well into my next question, which is about... You've always seemed to me pretty well networked in town. Like, you knew Sam Adams when he was in office, and I think you know Charlie Hales, right? And it just seems like there's not many civic leaders that come up and who you don't have some affiliation with. Is that as a result of your street fair work, or are you just a natural networker?
I'm pretty gregarious, outgoing, and I love to go to meetings. Ridiculous. Portland has meetings
well,
two or three
that
times
every day.
A day, so you know, you can't...
You go to a lot of these city meetings?
Then? I pretty much did.
Okay.
I don't, and I haven't in the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting. Historic Park Rose, for the first time ever, I was paid to be involved in a community building effort full time.
Mm.
40 hours a week.
Cool.
For 2 years. It was intense. So
you're
I
not
pretty
doing
much,
it now?
Nope. I quit in April to write the book.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second year, I mean, I had a full-time VISTA person. We had 80 people. I mean, 80 hours of concentrated labor.
Mm-hmm.
It was cool.
Okay.
So I actually didn't go to as many meetings, interestingly, even though I had more time. But I was really focused on outer, southeast. And I did go to meetings out there, I guess, East Portland. I went
right.
to a lot of meetings.
Right.
But I don't know. I really love talking to people. I come from a large family. I've got the large family perspective.
Right, right.
And it's easy for me to just step right into the middle of a group of people. And when I go to events where there's somebody who I really want to meet, I'll go meet them.
Mm-hmm.
I just go introduce myself.
Right.
And I often say, I'm going to go meet the most important person in the room.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't necessarily the keynote speaker. It's right. the most important person to me.
Right.
Because
be
of what I'm
Roberts
doing.
Who's there. Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would always go and find whoever it was. In fact, that's why PDC hired me without me even asking,
because mm-hmm.
they already knew who I was.
Mm-hmm.
I had already met two or three other people, you know,
mm-hmm.
that were working there and doing that kind of work.
Cool.
So, yeah, it's not that hard to meet people,
mm-hmm.
and especially if you listen.
Right.
I think it's the listening, probably.
Yeah, and if they see you enough and they know that you're, you know,
consistent.
Well-meaning person and consistent, and yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I want to give you some time to talk about your book. I'm excited to...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so 2 years,
uh-huh.
nonstop, focused on Historic Park Rose.
Mm-hmm.
made me realize that, I mean, I started a million things. We started so many things. We had, you know, 12 ongoing projects when I left, and a solid organization with a solid board and bylaws and guidelines and strategic planning and, you know, work plans. And I mean, we just, it was a stunning amount of work, actually, that I stepped back and looked at it in January of this year and went, wow, so I'm really good at starting things. I'm really good at this, and I love it, and I don't want to run it. This, I knew this about myself when I had Bridges. I don't want to run it forever. I'm great at starting things.
Right.
And I'm really good at starting this kind of thing where I can build community.
Right.
I don't want to do this with every single group. So the last 2 years before that, I had worked at 7 Street Bears one summer. I worked for Tigard. I worked for Vancouver. You know, these projects that are, you know, obviously I had dozens of them here in Portland. I didn't want to keep running around town and helping every community group start everything.
Right.
It just did not seem sustainable at all.
You just kind of get them on track and then kind of leave them to their own devices is kind of...
Yeah, and even that seemed kind of too impossible, really. I mean, I thought, I really just need to write this down. I need to write it down so that anybody can get at it and I can share it with the most efficient way possible.
Right.
Because I don't know if it's the most effective way to write a book. Clearly, having somebody there ongoing is really way more effective.
Right.
But I really had to get it out of my head. I had all these great things that, you know, I'd learned and
so much story knowledge.
Wanted to get it down. Yeah, yeah.
And the name of the book is?
Community, Street... What is it called? Street Bears for Community and Profit.
Cool. And when can we expect a...
End of October.
...release party? And,
it's going to the graphic designer this week.
Oh, okay. Coming
it's
up.
Almost
How many
done.
Pages do you think it'll be?
It's 120.
120. Wow. Big composite. In it, but it has like sort of...
So, yeah, there's 120 dynamic. Pages in an 8x10 format, but there's 82 distinct references and templates that can be purchased along with it. So you'll be able to buy the book. You'll also be able to buy the book with a complete set of templates that are usable, downloadable.
And there's an ebook version.
And then the ebook version will actually make them live right in the book. Click, you'll be right there into one of the templates.
Cool.
And I'm talking to this cool web designer guy about doing some videos so that I can take the whole planning chapter on video. Say, all right, so this is what
That's
you're going to do.
Idea.
Here's some role play ideas. You know, here's some ways that you can actually talk your neighbor into doing this.
Right, make it almost like a webinar or an e-course,
Yeah.
That's
so
a great
people
idea.
Will be able to subscribe to those kind of thing.
Because I bet that reservoir of knowledge is always expanding because things come up. People have different kinds of ideas on how to even do a street fair or different kinds of neighborhoods do it differently.
And I really... I didn't dumb this down, but I really tried to simplify this information. There's so much more. And it's not linear anyway. It's almost impossible to write about a street fair in a linear way, one chapter after another, because you do the first, the very first meeting, you're doing
everything,
the breadth of the whole fair.
Right.
But you can't really start that way. This is really written for people to start a fair that people haven't really built a community, want to get something going. It's not for people who've done it for 10 years.
Right.
There are some ideas on how to profit. For people who've done them for a long time, they might get some good glimmers and golden nuggets out of here that will, you know, help improve your profit, your bottom line on it. Not just monetary, but community profit as well.
Right.
Community building part, the social capital part. So I'm hoping that all ages in organizations will buy it.
So somebody in like Sutter Creek, California could buy this book and,
totally.
And have ideas. And
totally.
Cool.
Totally. Yeah, it's written for a... any audience. There's a lot of references to Portland, of course, but that's
naturally
it.
Cool. And then I just want to ask you, I'd like to ask all solopreneurs, which I would consider you to be. And you do work from home.
Yeah.
Is that right? So do you have any like productivity tips that you use? Because working from home can, it sounds really glamorous and great, but it can have its own, you know, obstacles.
But my suggestions are all the same ones that everybody already has on their books. You know, find the best time that you do your work. Close the door and make sure
have a designated space.
Designated space. Make sure no one else can be in there with you, including your cat. Because it's so easy to play with your cat.
Right.
Having really comfortable space as much as you can. Good light. It's really good for me. Light might be the comfortable thing for you. Mm-hmm. It might be dark for somebody else.
Right.
You know, so whatever it is that's really comfortable. I because I'm a solo entrepreneur, I always have been self-driven.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you can do mechanical all day long, mm-hmm. but until you actually develop the willpower to actually go back at it for another 4 hours, it doesn't matter how nice your space will be.
Right.
You pretty much need to have some willpower built into it. And I don't know how to... So one of the things I did to do this when I first was... I would reward myself for working for 4 hours straight.
I do that too.
Yeah. What's my favorite thing?
At Albina Press.
I got into these Duff bars. Those It was summer, so it was kind of hot. You know, those chocolate-covered... ice cream bars, mm-hmm. it's killer chocolate, and mm-hmm. some of them are salted caramel. Like, okay, if I can get through, I am having that.
I think that's perfectly legitimate.
I do too. I totally, or, you know, on Fridays, as long as I had put in a full week,
mm-hmm.
it was okay to blow off by noon and go out to lunch with somebody.
Yeah.
You know, go have my lunch things. But I quit all of my boards and clubs. I didn't do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I just stopped.
You just focus on the writing.
And all I did was write. So at the end of the day, and so the thing is, I didn't write all day. 4 hours is my thing.
Right.
That was it.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Although now, the last month, in editing and formatting and pictures and captions and all the reference stuff, it's been more like 6 or 8 hours.
It can take longer.
It gets way longer. So
I think it's going to be longer.
When it's coming out of your head when you're just writing,
mm-hmm.
you can't do it for that long.
Right.
And be good.
Mm-hmm.
And editing is what makes it good anyway, so maybe you could do it, but I couldn't.
Right. Well,
I had to get up, you know. I would just...
Hemingway said the first draft is always shit, right?
Always.
Yeah.
And Hemingway, so this summer, this is another cool tip, I think. I read about what really good writers do.
Mm-hmm.
So that book is called The Paris Wife.
Oh, yeah.
That came out this year or whenever, recently. I read that book, and it's a lot about him from her perspective.
Mm-hmm.
She writes about how he is as a writer.
Right.
And his stuff that he did and how he did it and, you know, the mechanics of it. Which I was learning, you know.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Cool, I can do that. You know, so I was kind of taking on his stuff.
Right.
And not even just the physical things, but, like, how he would pare and parse sentences down to the basic elements.
Mm-hmm.
How he did that.
Right.
I'm not going to be as good a writer as Hemingway. But I'm like, how can I do that? You know, actually try that.
Or was it F. Scott Fitzgerald who would play with this idea of like a sentence being short and then one being long? He'd kind of play with that.
Yeah,
which I was always interesting.
Yeah.
And this is what I ask all my interviewees before I sign off. What was your least favorite job you ever had?
Period?
Mm-hmm.
I cleaned the BFW halls when I was in high school.
Really?
On the weekends.
Can you imagine? Why was that so awful?
Oh!
I mean, besides the obvious reasons.
Puke!
Yeah.
Saturday mornings.
After like a big party?
Yeah, because they'd have weddings on Fridays and Saturdays. Mm-hmm. So we would clean up on Saturday morning and Sunday morning.
This is in Michigan?
Yeah. We got paid really good.
Yeah.
I was in ninth grade. I got paid really good. Made mm-hmm. great. I only worked 2 days a week.
Cool.
But it was the nastiest job. It was just awful. But it probably helped teach me a lot about entrepreneurship because no one really directed us.
Right.
I know that somebody gave us a training at the beginning and said, you got to make sure the bathrooms are clean or whatever. But, you know, if we cranked and we cut corners and we learned how to do it efficiently, we were done sooner.
Right.
You know, so we learned a lot on how to do it on our own. We didn't have a boss.
Right. Somebody looking over your shoulder the entire time.
Yeah. Yeah. None of us were the boss. There were three of us.
Which high school jobs, that's rare.
I know.
So.
So that was early training on how to do it well yourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we wouldn't get paid if it wasn't good enough.
Right.
So we actually really had to do it.
What were you paid per hour?
It wasn't an hour. It was like $100 each or something.
Oh, that's not bad.
So if we got it done in 2 hours, we made a killing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we were all there doing it. It wasn't that much, but it was a lot.
You each got paid $100?
We each got paid $50, maybe.
Oh, okay.
I think that's what it was. Because it usually took 4 hours, but we could crank if it was not a bad party, you know. And we had our shortcuts and how we could do it.
Right.
It probably was early training, though.
It probably made
how
you
to do it
great at cleaning your house, too, right?
Yeah, I did have a cleaning business. That's why I went into it.
Oh, you did?
It was one of my first businesses. It was my first business.
Okay.
It was a house cleaning business.
Oh, how long did you do that?
The rest of high school.
Okay.
BNC cleaning.
You were an entrepreneur in high school.
I was a total entrepreneur in high school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I did work restaurants occasionally, you know, in the summer. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, my girlfriend and I cleaned houses.
That's awesome.
We used to do the spring cleaning special. Where we'd come in and do all the spider webs because Michigan had major spiders.
Right.
All the windows.
Thank you for taking the time to do this.
Thank you for asking me.
Yeah.